Is this on?
Yes, my lord.
Good. Hello, this is God speaking. Can we dial that down?
Yes, my lord.
Thanks. Welcome, new arrival, to the Eternity Ward. Please take a number and make your way down to the left or the right to the waiting room. All you need is the refreshments I made just for you. I would tell you to steer clear of the apples, they're forbidden, and the two snakes. I mean, fools, sorry, that are chewing the fat in the corner, but you probably wouldn't listen anyway. So good luck, I bless you, and on your way.
Welcome to the Eternity Ward, where we flick through Reader's Digest and chat with our buddies as we wait for an appointment with God. I'm Chris Adams.
I'm Nick.
And here we are again on another podcast with a guest again. Shall I introduce our guest right off the bat, Nick? Or are we going to have some banter?
You're a tool.
Right, our guest tonight is Ruby Eisen. Ruby is, where do I start? She's a friend. She's a daughter, she's a sister, she's a wife. She used to be a youth worker, now is a community engagement officer. She's a bit of an activist when it comes to social issues, and she also is a feminist, which, well, I hope she's a feminist because we're talking feminism tonight and we got her on the show to talk. Are you a feminist, Ruby?
You missed hairy-legged feminist.
Right.
Well, hairy-legged right now anyway, not out of principle, more out of laziness, but, you know, that's me.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have
you. I'm hairy-legged.
Ah, cool. Well, you know. Maybe I'll have you a feminist by the end of this too.
I'm halfway
there. Hairy legs is the main qualifier, so.
I've got a beard. Do you need a beard?
Look, you don't, but every now and then I find a hair growing, so maybe I'll be growing one too soon. Maybe that'll be the next qualifier. Must have beard.
Perfect.
So feminism. We're talking feminism. Where do we start? No, I'm going to start with asking Ruby about Ruby.
Okay.
Does that sound fair, Nick?
Very fair.
Very fair.
Sounds good.
Who's Ruby?
Ooh, that's a big question from the start.
We'll go back a bit. So you do identify as a feminist.
I do.
When did that sort of like start to happen for you? Because,
good question.
You know, you weren't just born one, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't think you can be born a feminist. I don't think you can be born an anythingist, probably. I don't know, I guess. I think I was always pretty sensitive to gender inequality specifically. But I reckon I didn't have much of a framework for what that meant. So I was probably pretty inconsistent in what I cared about and what I didn't when it came to women's issues. I think I was pretty passionate about social justice issues. So I know, you know, things around poverty, around refugees, around Aboriginal rights, things like that really interested me. But I guess feminism, women's issues, I think I was probably more conservative on in a lot of ways because I don't think I had much of a framework. I had no idea about feminist ideology, probably didn't even know what the word meant really. But every now and then something just got to me. It might have been my personal experience. It might have been something that I observed happen. They're just like, that doesn't seem right. But if I reflect, there were probably some things I was really inconsistent about. So I think probably when I thought about things around sex, growing up in, you know, a Christian home, growing up in the church, growing up in a very conservative school, I probably believed a lot of those messages about, you know, controlling your sexuality, a lot of that responsibility is on women. Sex is, you know, a sacred thing that women should be protecting in themselves, and, you know, men have desires that often they can't control, and, you know, some of these messages that I think I probably really believed. And I don't think it was till I started to reach my late teens, early 20s that I started to get passionate about women's issues in terms of domestic violence. And so I started to read articles, books. I watch a lot of political debates on YouTube. Just ask my husband. He has to fall asleep to them every night. And some make me really angry, and so I can't sleep. And he tells me again and again, why do you listen to this just before you go? I don't know. I have no explanation for it. But I think I started to learn, and I think I started to gain a bit more of a framework for those beliefs. So not that feminists all agree on the same things, but that there was an answer to those gut feelings, that when things just didn't feel quite right. So, you know, I mean, my parents are pretty bloody good as far as parents go. I'd say 95, maybe 97% on their good days. But, you know, I mean, they, like anyone, you know, sometimes these messages around, I mean, it seems so trivial when I think about it, but the girls at the dinner table weren't allowed to burp. Or we burp and sort of, you know, don't burp. It's a bit rude.
Would you like to burp now?
I can't burp on demand. It's never been a skill of mine. I know it's disappointing.
That would have really got to your father.
Probably wished I could. But then my brother and my dad would, you know, happily burp at the dinner table and it wasn't mentioned. It seems small and obviously I'd, you know, we're all human. So, but it was those little things. Okay, this is embarrassing. But I was a big nerd. I was the school captain. And when our teachers decided they'd form a boys' rugby team, tackle rugby, to verse other schools, I was like, okay, cool. So where's the girls' team? And they, being the conservative Anglican school that they were, said, oh, no, we're not having a girls' team. And I was furious, obviously. I'm not at all passionate about rugby. I don't know why I was so angry, but I started a petition. I started a few petitions in high school and, you know, I called a lot of meetings with my principal and deputy principal and demanded certain things. And one of them was that they start a women's rugby team. And my answer that I got back was, well, no, the girls might get hurt. That was all they had. They had no other reason. Now, again, it doesn't seem like a big deal, but it was these small things that just something didn't sit right with me. Something's wrong there. I had no framework, no ideology for it. I just, that doesn't sound right. And so I think I've found feminism a place where that feeling of that doesn't feel right for me, but also some of the scary statistics you hear from around the world, where that feeling of that doesn't feel right is appreciated and understood. And there's that sort of, yes, it shouldn't feel right. There's something wrong with that and it's okay that it doesn't feel right.
So did feminism start to give you some words? So, you know, start to articulate what some of those feelings were?
Absolutely. And you hear so many feminist buzzwords. I mean, they'll probably come up tonight, let's be honest, male privilege, misogyny, toxic masculinity, you know, all this stuff that my husband, now I hear him, you know, spitting them out and I just never felt so attracted to him as when he said patriarchy and toxic masculinity in the same sentence. And, you know, that was just great. So, you know, some of those words, it's like, oh, that's what's going on. You know, that was what was happening then. Or that's why, you know, this is such a national crisis, because there's these words that sort of help describe it. And I am far from believing that feminism is perfect. You know, we have our disagreements even between feminists, probably where the most disagreements happen. But there was something hopeful about it almost, you know, that there's something that we can be hopeful about, that what we experience as women doesn't have to be dismissed as hysterical, but it can be appreciated as real, and that there's words and there's systems and there's cultural norms that help us understand what's going on. And that's who Ruby is.
I like Ruby already.
Ah, thanks, Nick.
I like the image of Ruby, you know, pounding the walkways at the school with a placard.
Gosh.
And
oh, how embarrassing.
While she's burping.
I will burp when I want to burp.
Did you start a petition at home about that?
No, to my mum's credit, I said, well, that's not fair. And I think she realised pretty quickly, okay, that's probably, we maybe need to have a consistent approach. Either we all burp or none of us burp.
Look at you, advocating for change.
I know. I really changed the world. Well, I changed the Hammond family dinner table anyway. I don't know if it was for the better, but bit by bit, it's baby steps, Nick.
No, that's awesome. So can we get, like, I'd like to hear from both of you guys what you think feminism is.
Good question. Would you like to go first, Chris? Or?
Yeah. Definition of feminism is equality of the genders, equality of opportunity for men and women. That's essentially what feminism for me is trying to work towards, so that they're addressing the fact that that's not where we're at. Pretty straightforward for me.
I agree. I think something I've realized a little bit in that discussion is, I sort of used to say, look, if you believe in equality between the genders, then you're a feminist. And I don't say that anymore, because I think the one thing missing from that is kind of what you just touched on, is I think there needs to also be an acknowledgement that there's not equality between the genders, and that it comes from the perspective of that we live in a patriarchy and that women experience disadvantage based on the fact that they're women. So I think, yeah, what you said, equality of the genders, but I think sometimes there's that understanding of where we're at now, maybe not a deep understanding, but from the perspective of what life is like for women. Do you know what I mean?
I think so.
I'm partially thinking out loud.
Do you have a definition of feminism that differs at all, or does that answer your question?
I certainly agree with everything you said, Chris. If feminism is simply the equality of opportunity, then to me that's obvious. And if someone doesn't agree with that, then I think there's something wrong with them.
Yeah.
And, like, obviously every human being on the planet should face the same opportunities. That doesn't mean, the problem I think is when feminists start talking about, they don't use this word, but they start talking about the equality of outcome. We'll probably get into the gender wage gap, but that's one of the areas where feminists start bringing up outcome instead of opportunity, and that's where I think it goes off the rails.
Okay.
So I agree with what you just said, Chris, about equality of opportunity and equality between the genders. The thing that I find strange is the idea that it then needs to have a feminine title. Like if it's just about equality, you know, we don't need to call it masculinism.
I agree with you on that. I think that's why I add the second bit, because I think the word feminist is different to just equality. I think it comes with a recognition of something extra there. And I agree with you. I think if someone told me that they were a feminist, but men and women are currently equal and there's no disadvantage for women in the world. I mean, I'm not someone to tell someone whether or not they're a feminist. That's not up to me to decide. But I think internally I'd probably question whether that was the appropriate word for what they were saying. Does that make sense? I mean, it's not up to me to decide who is and who isn't. If someone identifies that way, then good on them. But I think what you're saying is, yeah, the word feminine's in there for a reason.
Yeah. So I think there are very real issues that feminists can address, and I would count myself as one of them in terms of on a global scale. There's no doubt that there are other countries in the world where women are treated as property of the men in those societies. You know, they're forced to live in cloth bags, and if they don't dress modestly, then they can be stoned to death, or they can be, you know, locked in a basement or whatever. And the men can pretty much just do whatever they want to them. But, like, I'm on your side 100% there. That's horrific, and I don't care what the gender of the people are. That's awful. But when you come back to the West, I just don't think there's those issues anymore. There's no laws in our country that are slanted towards men or women. So I just don't think feminism needs to exist in the West anymore.
We've had this sort of discussion before, you and I, Nick, and I agree. I don't think there's not a government sanctioned sort of any laws that are going to stop a woman from being able to have an equal opportunity within our society. But for me, it's not just about the laws. It's about the fact that it's an attitudinal response across society. It's about cultural expectations. It's about the stereotypes that we get brought up in, the, you know, the gender roles that people are sort of indoctrinated into, you know, the marketing, which is basically telling people who they should be, you know, like telling people this is what a male is, this is what a female is. And so we end up with all of this conditioning, all of this indoctrination into who we think we are. And that's what goes towards an imbalance. So it's not that there is a law saying that a woman can't do this and a man can. The only laws that are really around that you could even discuss really are to do with like maternity leave, paternity leave and abortion. So we've made a lot of progress. We've made a lot of progress, but I think that those other things within our society, that the things that people, you know, hold within the way that they see the world, their worldviews, that's where the work is. There's still work and social change to be had, I think.
I totally agree with what Chris is saying, but can I add to that? Sure, I mean, we have anti-discrimination acts and, you know, you could argue that, but there's no arguing that, you know, the criminal justice system is not perfect and it doesn't always result in justice for women. In fact, it often doesn't. I mean, I think it's about 70% of rapes go unreported, and of the ones that go reported, about 4% result in a criminal conviction, in a prison sentence. I mean, so sure, you can say that, you know, technically before the law, we're equal, but when women are wildly, you know, the victims of rape far more than men are, and we're seeing that kind of rate of conviction, I mean, I don't know how you can argue that there's no need for any voice to that and what's happening there. I mean, a woman dies every week from domestic violence. Yes, domestic violence is illegal. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen. It doesn't mean it's not a major issue. I mean, we score incredibly high in the world for sexual assault rates and, you know, score incredibly high for women feeling unsafe in public space. You know, we have an incredibly high rate and a very, you know, low rate of women, 70% of women not reporting it when it happens. So it's kind of scary to think that our rates were already high and that's only a fraction of what it is. I'm not saying I'm glad I live in Australia. Of course I am, you know. There's issues around the world that are incredibly, I don't know, they're hard to face. But I think I struggle with that sort of whataboutery sort of approach. You know, if you're caring about feminism in Australia, what about what's happening overseas? I'd like to think I can care about both. I'd like to think I can be active about both. I'd like to think I can bring issues that affect women all over the world without saying, well, I just won't talk about Australia because there's worse. A woman dies every week from domestic violence, and I think she deserves to have a voice.
Yeah, of course. Domestic violence is awful. I think we all agree with that. That's an easy one.
Yep.
But the idea that women are more often the victim of violence in our society is it's the opposite of true. 78% of murders in Australia are men.
Correct.
It's not a one-way street. I don't know why you would focus on statistics about women when there's plenty of, about men that are also awful as well. But we don't go around saying we need some sort of men's rights organisation that can stick up for men. Like, we don't. We just need equality.
Well, yeah, I know what you say. I would argue that feminism is standing up for men. Feminism, I believe, is made to benefit men. And, you know, you say men account for 78%, was it, of murders. They also account for 95% of perpetrators. And I believe that comes from these norms about what it means to be a man.
Yeah.
And, you know, that we can't help teach our young boys that it's okay to talk through things. It's okay to have emotion. It's okay to be soft. It's okay to be gentle. It's okay to love, you know, and that they need to have some sort of brutish, aggressive, violent way to be tough and to be a man, or, you know, they have to be having sex with lots of people. So I would actually argue feminism is, and I'm not saying all feminists would say that, but that's what I believe.
And you think feminism is the right label for that? Because I think that's sending a different message.
Sure. I know what you're saying. I don't think equality is the right label. If you can give me a better one, I'll take
it. Why not? What's wrong with equality?
I don't think it's addressing the cause. I don't think it's addressing where the inequality is. I don't know.
Is there even an issue of inequality? It's just an issue of violence, right?
Yeah, that's what domestic violence is.
No, I mean domestic violence is mostly perpetrated by men against women.
Yeah, the vast majority of domestic violence would be against women.
Yeah, but no before, doubt about that. Before that, you were talking about violence against men, which is mostly done by men. So that's an issue of violence, not inequality, right?
So we shouldn't talk about domestic violence when we're talking about feminism.
No, I'm just saying.
Isn't that what you're saying? We shouldn't talk about violence when we're talking about feminism?
No, of course you can talk about domestic violence when you're talking about feminism.
Just not violence against men.
What I'm saying is that if you're talking about violence against men, which is done predominantly by men, does that or should that come under a banner of feminism, which is what I thought you were asking. But in that, sure, feminism can help redefine how men see themselves and each other and interact and all in a positive way, which can be good for men and for women. But I just reckon that man-on-man violence, it could possibly come under a different name, that's all.
It's also worth noting that feminism has come a long way. And I think like first wave feminism was about gaining equal rights. And that's, I think, probably where the name, I don't know when the name started, but, you know, that probably was more just focused on women when before the law, women literally weren't equal before the law. And so movements develop and change. I have no issue in the name. I feel like it still represents it, but they do develop and change. And I think in modern time, they've sort of grown to encompass other issues as well. Now that women have equality, technically, before the law, that doesn't mean they have equality. So it's sort of moved and shifted and changed as the priorities for women have changed. So I think it's worth noting that's probably where the name came from, that it really literally was just, come on, let us vote, let us drive, let us own property. And it's evolved from there.
Yeah, so those are really obvious things. Like, if that's what feminists meant, then hopefully everyone would consider themselves a feminist, because that's about equality. That's about both sexes being equal, having the equality of opportunity that we were talking about before. That's to me, that's obvious. It's when you start going down these other lines of domestic violence, bringing up those statistics or bringing up the wage gap or bringing up like sexual assault, those sort of things, or abortion laws, all those sort of things, I just don't think point to a society that is slanted towards men.
Can I ask why that is?
Yeah, because you just cherry pick. Well, not you. I don't mean you. Sorry. That is just a cherry picking of specific facts. Like, there is no doubt there are certain ways that women are disadvantaged in society more than men, but there's also the reverse. There's also plenty of ways that men are disadvantaged compared to women.
Yes.
And the idea that you would just focus on one and pretend like that's fighting for equality, it's not fighting for equality. That's fighting for half of equality, and it's slanted towards women because it's focused on women. And that's why I think feminism is not the way to go. Equality is the way to go. Let's fight for all of the issues, not just the female ones.
Yeah, but can you do both? Can you passionately fight for women because that's something that you really care about, but also care about men? I mean, can both things be true?
But do you go around calling yourself a masculinist?
Is that a thing? I've never heard it before.
No, it's not. That's the problem.
There's MRA. That's a thing.
Yeah, MRAs. I definitely don't consider myself part of an MRA.
Yeah, you know, they shouldn't exist either.
Okay, well, I don't know. I feel like I don't want to defend a position I don't have. I mean, I'm just thinking through what you're saying. I'd probably call what you're saying a false equivalency. I agree that men are disadvantaged in certain ways, but I don't think that you can compare the two as equal. I don't think there is an equal amount of disadvantage. In fact, I think usually when men are disadvantaged, the people that it impacts are the women in their life often. So, for example, messages around masculinity and what it means to be masculine in our culture, yes, that impacts men in a negative way, but it also, you know, is incredibly damaging to women in the way that they act in relationships, in, you know, we're talking about domestic violence and violence in general. Yeah, I think that's a false equivalency. I don't think that you can compare the two like they're just the same.
Like, what sort of disadvantage, Nick, as an example, would you say men are disadvantaged compared to women?
Yep, sure. So education, so women fare better in education grades all the way from kinder through to university. They get more awards. They graduate more from uni. There's higher enrollment of females in uni. In work, men are vastly overrepresented in the dangerous occupations like mining, construction, police, military, all that sort of stuff. 92% of workplace fatalities are men. We talked about violence a little bit. So men are twice as likely to be the victims of violent crime at university. 78% of murder victims are men. 78% of suicides are male. 92% of the jail population are male. 60% of homelessness is male, and females live 5 years longer. Like, I don't know how you don't look at that list and go, Jesus, men have it way worse in society than women.
So you think men have it worse?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I think men and women are built differently. We are biologically different. All of us have our own strengths and weaknesses, and they work out in different ways in society, and it's complex. And some of those things lead to disadvantages for men. Some of them lead to disadvantages for women. And I just think in the West, our society is at a point where men and women do have the equality of opportunity, and we shouldn't judge the choices that men make and the choices that women make. We're free to make whatever choices we make, unless it harms another person, obviously.
I would say that a lot of the choices that men and women make are also conditioned choices. I mean, you said before that women do better in education. So why are they not dominating highly academic roles then? Is that patriarchy or choice or a bit of both? I mean, some of it's got to be choice, but even that choice can come out of layers of stereotyping and attitudes, conditioning, experience, all of that stuff that feminism is trying to unravel.
But that's putting pressure on women especially to be a certain way. You're pressuring women to don't have kids, go and get a job, you need to do your bit for feminism. Like, I don't think that's helpful for women. And you're pressuring men, you guys need to stay at home and look after your kids and do more housework, you lazy bastards. That's not helpful either. We need to say, you woman, you man, if you're a couple, sit down and talk about it. Work it out for yourselves. It's not my job from the outside to come into someone's relationship and say, you guys need to do it this way.
Yeah, but I was listening to someone talk on just this topic the other day and how it takes wealth or extraordinary circumstances to have the situation like you and your wife have, where you've agreed to stay home and look after the kids. And that's great, but it's not normal. You know, to have that conversation, how normal is that in our society?
It's not normal.
And it should be normal.
It's not, but
I think, Nick, choice, it can be an easy word to throw around as a way of maybe shifting responsibility onto each individual and away from oppressive systems in society. I mean, I was a youth worker. The amount of times I hear people say, well, you know, young people who get in trouble with the law or at school, I mean, it's their choice, you know. They choose to do that and no one told them they had to. And, of course, I get that. But are they choosing from the same options? You know, like bloody hell, you know, my dad growing up, he did not choose from the same options that I did growing up, that's for sure. So sure, he made his choices, but was he choosing from the same things? And it sounds like you and your wife have it sorted. I think, you know, I'm really happy with the way my husband and I figure out decisions. I don't feel like one of us is in charge at all. I feel like we try to keep it pretty equal. I'd say you and I are pretty privileged people. I think we have a lot of privilege in that way. We're educated and we're probably raised by people who had their heads screwed on. So I think it's really easy to just throw around the word, it's their choice, let's let them make their choice. And of course, if a woman chooses to stay home, complete respect. My mum was a stay-at-home mum and she would say it was her life's work, and that's awesome. A lot of women choose to work. But I think just by saying, well, it's their choice now, there's equality, you know, they can choose it, dust our hands of this. We no longer have to discuss whether our culture in any way impacts whether a woman really gets to choose from the same options as a man.
So what choices are they forced into, do you think?
I don't think forced is the right
word. Or pressured into.
Sure. Okay.
Whatever word you would use.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think biologically you could say we're pushed in different directions. Like, I think biologically women are pushed towards wanting to raise kids. And men are pushed towards wanting to be involved in very different occupations than women are.
Sure. Well, I don't know. I'd say we have a pretty shocking education around safe sex, around consent, around sexual health, reproduction, abortion, things like that. I mean, that largely affects women. It's often women who are left raising children that perhaps they didn't plan for and without the support of men. And you can say it was their choice to have sex, you know, sure. You can say it was their choice to give birth, sure. But did they really choose that from all the same options that I got to choose from? I'm not sure that they did. Yeah, I guess in employment, when you look at employment, I won't pretend to know a lot about the wage gap. I'm far from, you know, an expert on that issue. But I certainly, I mean, they've done studies about women in the workplace and the way that women are treated compared with the way men are treated. This really interesting study that they did about interruptions in the workplace, and when women are interrupted, it's often to criticize them. And, you know, men aren't interrupted in a way that criticizes them. Women are asked to provide more evidence, more facts. Women are talked down to more. You know, it might seem like a small thing, but all that impacts on employment opportunity, the way you advance in your career and, you know, maternity leave and paternity leave as well. I think the fact that often men are in jobs that pay more, you know, can often make it a really difficult choice for a woman to, you know, say, well, I really want to work. And sometimes it just makes more fiscal sense for a man to work because he's being paid more. I mean, I think there's, I think there's a lot. I think, you know, we talk about sexual assault and rape culture. The fact that sexual assault affects women so much more than men, I don't know. I'm hesitant to talk about it because I haven't been a victim of rape or sexual assault. But I would say if that's happened to you in your life, I don't know that you are choosing from the same options that someone like me is. I've seen the way it affects young girls, and to get through the day can be a challenge. And so to say, oh, the world is their oyster, they can choose whatever they want, I don't think it's that straightforward.
No, of course not. Rape's horrific, but it's also, I don't think it's helpful to say, poor you, you're going to be a victim for the rest of your life.
No.
I don't think that's helpful either. I think it's helpful to say, you are strong, you will get through this.
Sure.
It'll be difficult, it'll be really fucking hard, but you will get through it.
Yeah.
Totally. But I read some stats today about women in Queensland prisons. 95% had experienced abuse, mostly from childhood. 98% physical abuse, 89% sexual, 70% emotional. I've just found it shocking. And it just goes to show that, yeah, that stuff stays with people and can affect so much after the fact.
I know no one's saying there's no healing that ever happens. Of course there is. But to stand in front of a person who's been victim of rape and say, you'll get through it, just, you know, be strong and it's going to be hard. And I mean, I'm not saying they're not good things to say, but I think it's really oversimplifying what sexual assault and violence does to a person.
Yeah, of course.
That is a lifelong struggle. I'm not saying they can't get anywhere. I'm not saying they shouldn't have hope, but it is a lifelong struggle.
Have hope.
Absolutely, they should, yeah.
Yeah.
But trauma is linked to all kinds of disadvantage, you know. Trauma's linked to obesity, trauma's linked to, you know, unemployment, trauma's linked to the criminal justice system. I mean, I think trauma is a very complex thing that maybe it'd be good to have a psychologist here to talk about it. But, you know, to simplify it with, you know, a positive, hopeful message, that's part of the story. That's part of the story. No, I'm not saying it's not the whole story though. And I want to be careful to speak too much about what the experience is like for someone who's been through that, because I don't know. But my experience with young people in communities where sexual assault is really prevalent is that it's really not that simple.
Yeah, I think optimism, hope, all those sort of things aren't just a part of the puzzle piece. I think they're one of the key ones.
Mm.
That's maybe the only thing that gets a lot of people through it. And also just I'm not going to give up is another thing. Yeah, like my wife was raped as a kid for a decade and it sucked, and it still sucks for now.
Mm.
And it's not like she's over it. She'll probably never be over it. But to say that that's going to be the defining feature of her life, well, that would be horrible. And it's definitely not, because she's an amazing person,
yeah,
and
course.
The transformation that she's gone through, and she's got a job that pays her a lot more than what my job was and good on her. And she's worked really hard for that and continues to work really hard for it. And so you can't let yourself be defeated by these circumstances. like, yeah, rape sucks, but it's not like we have a society that celebrates rape. We don't celebrate rapists. We put them in jail.
Well, we put 4% of the reported rapes in jail.
You said that before.
I think it was like 17%.
I've got different, but a different
still,
number.
But that's still a terrible. Regardless.
But that's the ones that are reported and 70% aren't reported.
Regardless of what the statistic is, are you saying that our justice system is deliberately not convicting these people? Or, like, I don't understand what you're saying.
I'm not an expert on the criminal justice system, so I'm not sure if I could speak exactly to how it comes about. So I think there's probably a few reasons. I don't think rape is celebrated isn't the phrase I would use.
How do you think rape is viewed in our community?
The majority of people believe rape is wrong, obviously. I never would argue anything but that. However, what is rape is a topic of discussion. What is consent is not always straightforward. And if you talk to young boys, and particularly, you know, a lot of what they see in porn is that women, you know, like to be pushed and pressured and sometimes physically pushed into having sex. And so I think no one really thinks that a stranger grabbing you and pulling you into an alleyway and raping you is, of course, agree with you, that'd be horrific. No one really in their right mind thinks that that's okay. But I think, I mean, rape culture is really what we're talking about. Maybe rape's not the best word in referring to rape culture. Sexual assault culture. I don't know. I don't know what the right word is for it, but absolutely sexual assault is normalized. It is joked about. It is this message that girl, I mean, did you really say no? Did you clearly say no? I mean, what were you wearing at the time? I mean, why were you out at 3 a.m. by yourself? I mean, you know, it's those sort of messages that I think mean, you know, sure, according to the law, it's illegal to rape someone, yes. But it's the messages that women are told about often the responsibility being on them to, you know, stop this indescribable sexual urge that men have from taking over them. And maybe that's not the experience you've had. That's certainly the experience I've had and the messages I've been told. Yeah, I guess, I don't know, I think you're crazy if you don't think that, you know, there's still a collective attitude towards rape that needs to come a long way. I think you sort of...
Call me crazy.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah.
I think it's crazy to say that Australia doesn't think that rape is horrendous. The idea that we joke about it in private and somehow celebrate it in that way is just, I don't know where you're coming from. You must live in a different part of Australia to me.
Yeah, well, possibly. I mean, definitely. I live in Western Sydney and I hang out with teenage boys in my work who are from some pretty rough areas in Western Sydney. A lot of them have witnessed sexual and domestic violence in their homes. So it's very likely we're coming from different experiences. My husband, for example, works with boys aged about 15 to 25, and the amount of times he has to pull them up for the way they speak about women in a sexually aggressive way. And ask any woman can tell you she's had catcalls and harassment as she walks down the street. I physically tense up when I walk past a group of guys in public because the normalization of being able to call out to women in the street as though they're, you know, just there for their entertainment. That's what rape culture is. It's like, it's not just saying rape is okay. It is the normalization of women as nothing but sort of this sexual object that we get to talk about however we want. We get to call them sluts if they sleep around and frigids if they don't. And it's the normalizing of women's bodies aren't their own. They're here for my sexual pleasure. And if you look at porn, you know, you look at the way the brain works, the more intense the porn you watch, you know, the more difficult it is to go back. And so young boys are watching more and more aggressive and violent porn and actually thinking, I wish I had the statistics about young girls, like I'm talking 14-year-old girls, feeling pressured to do things like anal sex because that's what boys see in porn and believe that all girls want that and believe that girls want to feel a bit of pressure to have sex. You know, that's what I'm talking about when I talk about rape culture. I'm not sure what you see as rape culture. You know, what does that mean to you?
So you're not actually talking about rape then, it sounds like. Well, why call it rape culture?
It's the name that it's got.
Yeah, it's a good question.
That's demeaning to people that have been raped.
Absolutely. Let's call it something else.
All right, good.
It's the name that it's got. That's, you know,
it's the name. Well,
it's the common understanding.
But why do feminists use it then?
I don't know. It's the only phrase I've got. If I could come up with a better one. I mean, I have other things to describe it that I would say are the causes of rape culture. So I talk a lot about toxic masculinity, so ideas about what it means to be masculine. And I like to talk about that because I think that's more talking about the cause of things like rape culture. So, you know, men being taught that, you know, I've heard the amount of, you know, guys you talk about, you know, that they felt pressure to have sex young, and the longer it took them to lose their virginity, the more humiliating it gets, you know. So things about that, I think, you know, can often lead to, I don't know what we call it now, not rape culture, but, you know, a culture of normalizing aggressive sexual behavior. Does that work? I don't know. Yeah, you're right. It's not a perfect phrase. And obviously, if you think it means saying rape is okay, then probably other people think that. So perhaps I need to think of a better phrase.
How could rape culture not be talking about rape?
But I would say, you know, sometimes it is talking about rape. Or sometimes it's talking about sort of, I don't know, you look at the Me Too movement and a lot of young guys not understanding what consent is. And even just, you know, the discussion about if she's really drunk and she doesn't scream no at the top of her lungs, then it's not really rape. Like, there's a lot of messages around that I would say it is rape if a woman or man is unable to verbally give their consent. I don't think that's clear. A lot of young men wouldn't call that rape.
Do you and your husband verbally consent every time you have sex? I just think that's a silly way to look at it.
Okay, no, that's a good question. I don't think it's really black and white, and yeah. I think it is a really good question, and it's difficult because we need to have the conversation, because how do we teach it? For example, this is getting a little bit intimate. Is it okay
it's if fine,
I talk about
get,
my
yeah.
sex life? My husband's given me permission to talk about
you
whatever
know,
I
you
want.
You normally talk about your sex life all the time, don't you?
I actually do, probably more than I should. Okay, so we don't have a, you know, contractual agreement. We often say, do you feel like having sex? Not really. Okay, no worries. Do you feel like having sex? Yeah, okay. Yes, it often does happen like that. I think in a relationship, it's maybe a bit different to casual sex, but we say things like, do you like that? Does that feel good? How's that? We actually do communicate and talk while we're having sex, because we believe even within a marriage, you need to respect people's boundaries and how they're feeling, you know. Actually, a good way of looking at it, they used to have this phrase, no means no. I'm sure you've heard that before, as a way of explaining to people, you know, if they say no, they mean no, don't push it. Now they're actually talking a little bit differently about yes means yes. So trying to help people understand how to know if someone really wants to have sex. So not if they sort of don't feel like they can say no, like they're nervous to say no, they feel pressured to say no, they feel pressured not to say no, but how to be able to try and read verbal cues, how to be able to ask the right questions. So it's not super awkward when you have to get a contract out. I'm not saying it's straightforward. I think it's a difficult thing to be able to teach, and it's a difficult thing to be able to know.
It's difficult because girls are often sort of trained to not say no,
yeah,
in the sense that
they want to be liked and...
Yeah, but it's also if you say no, then that can put you in a dangerous situation, that suddenly the guy feels like, oh, you're accusing me of something, you know.
Of course.
Because there can be a power imbalance.
Well, just the other day, a friend told me a story, and I know this is one story, I'm not saying it's a statistic, of a time she had met up with a date, someone that she just met. They were kissing in his apartment. He wanted to go a lot further. And she, you know, said to me, like, I kind of jokingly sort of joked around, oh, no, you know. And she, you know, she did it, you know, 5, 6, 7 times. And she said, you know, she kind of felt embarrassed. She said, maybe I should have been a lot more, you know, no, and pushed him off. But I didn't know him very well. I'm in his apartment by myself. I have no idea of knowing how he might react if I was to, you know, aggressively say it. So I think it's not easy. I don't think there's an easy solution to it, but we need to be able to engage in the conversation in a way that's not accusing people, but just it's acknowledging that sex in a world, particularly where people are having sex with people they're not in a relationship with, how can we teach young boys and young girls to know when someone really wants it or when maybe they're afraid to say no?
Part of it for me is part of feminism is teaching women that they can say no.
Yes, you know, they can.
Because that's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, but you can.
And
you have every
and
right
teaching
to.
Young boys, you know, what are some ways they can be sure that this is consensual? Give them some practical skills. How can you know? There's training that they do in schools where they talk about a role play, that sounds a little bit, not a role play of the sex itself, but of conversations you might have and how you might be able to read it better. Because, yeah, I think, I mean, the Me Too movement, I think, has brought out some really interesting discussion around this. You guys are probably familiar with Aziz Ansari and what's happened there.
Yep.
So I think that's a great example of I'm not a lawyer. I probably wouldn't class it as sexual assault, the story I read of what happened. I'm not a lawyer. Maybe a lawyer would say differently. I wouldn't class it as sexual assault.
Probably. I'm glad you put probably in there.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's blurry lines. I wouldn't say that's what it was. However, I think
But it'd be okay if someone did say it was.
Are you asked? Is that a question?
Yeah.
You're saying it wouldn't be okay if someone said that?
No. I think he's saying that Ruby's saying it's probably not, but you're saying, well, but you'd feel okay if someone said it was? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, like why would you say probably?
Well, because I only read it in an article. I wasn't there. So all I could do was read what I read. I mean, I read a short 200 words on what happened from one person's perspective. So that's all I've got to go on. All I'm saying is I don't want to speak to something I don't know about. And from the best of what I read, I would say it's not sexual assault. However, this woman feels that it is. So instead of saying, well, Me Too's crap, it's bullshit, let's throw it out. Obviously, careers are being destroyed and Aziz isn't a rapist, so why is his name... Sure, I mean, I would happily go see an Aziz Ansari movie still. I'm not interested in boycotting him, but it allows us to have a really important conversation. So some people would call that sexual assault, some people wouldn't. How can women know? How can women be empowered to be able to feel that they can say no? How can men be equipped to be able to read nonverbal cues better so that they can be certain that this is consensual and understand better that it's not always that easy for women to say no? A man just scientifically, biologically, physically has power over a woman in that situation, usually, not all the time. I reckon I could take you too, but, you know, if it was it came to a fist fight.
Yeah.
I'm pretty tough, you know, but often that there's a physical power that men have over women. So how do we help guys understand better what they can do to be 100% certain that this woman's comfortable and consensual? And how do we equip women to feel comfortable and it's okay to say no? And it's okay to say no, even if you've already started, that is okay as well. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to say no, even if you're wearing a low cut top and a short skirt. And it's okay to say no if you've been flirting with him all night. It is okay to say no. It is okay to say no. It is okay to say no. You know, it's twofold. I don't think it's straightforward. I think in the case of Aziz, complex. I certainly wouldn't lump that in with the Harvey Weinsteins, but I think there is a separate but important conversation to have about that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, to me.
Nick?
Just say yes.
Yes.
So Nick, you can be empowered to say no if you don't
agree.
Thank
you. I really like how you were talking about how it's not just men's responsibilities, because I don't think that comes through in a lot of feminist stuff. And I don't think that came through when you were talking about your friend either. The idea that women need to see themselves as strong and that I can stand up and say no, that I'm not this weak little pedal that anyone can push around. No, that's not me. I'm strong.
Of course.
So women have to take responsibility for that. Now, that does not take away the responsibility that men have, but both parties have responsibility. So, yes, men
need to get better. That's what I think feminism is for, better. Man.
Yeah.
It's to help get
don't
there.
Call it
that.
Feminism.
If you could see his facial expression at the moment, it's classic. But, okay, back to this story about my friend. So you're saying, you know, you didn't think that came through. I'm not saying there weren't things she could do, but could you acknowledge that there are situations for someone who is physically weaker than another person where it is fair that they feel disempowered and they feel they may have no other choice?
100%.
Yeah. So that's not to take responsibility away, of course, but we need to acknowledge that women, we don't want to treat them as though they're not their own agents. Of course, we need to empower women to have their own agency. But we can't ignore that there are just situations where men will hold a certain amount of power.
So if you're a woman, don't let yourself be put in a position where you are one-on-one in a difficult position with someone who's stronger than you. Use your brain before that.
Okay, so if someone's assaulted in that situation, it's because they didn't use their brain? I'm clarifying. That might not be what you're saying.
You're trying to get me to say that it's all the woman's fault, and that's not what I'm saying.
No, I don't think that's what you're saying.
But did their decisions have any impact on it at all? Yes, it did. Of course it did. Is that victim blaming? No, it's not. It's just saying that's the reality.
But why can't a woman go home with a man just to kiss? Why can't she do that?
What? Have you ever talked to a man before?
Okay, so because men are horny, women don't have the freedom to just kiss them.
I would say you are optimistic beyond belief.
I think you're taking the responsibility away from men. I think you are taking way too much responsibility away from men. If women can be empowered to be their own agent, men can be empowered to control their dick. And that is just the truth. Men need to be able to take, I don't care how fucking horny you are, you are not an animal. You are capable of controlling yourself. I promise you, I have been told before that it is more on me to set sexual boundaries because I don't have the same sexual drive. Again, going into my sex life, are we okay with this?
Very much so.
I can guarantee you, I have talked to my husband about this and I have said, is there ever a situation where you physically can't stop yourself? And he said, it does not matter at what point during sex. It's harder the later on you get in the piece, the more difficult it is. But to say that because men are, you know, easily aroused or, you know, they've got this strong sexual drive, which, by the way, women do too, just FYI, that for some reason women shouldn't just want to kiss. Don't go home to his place if you're not planning on having sex with him. I mean, maybe this is not a great example. You buy a pair of shoes from a store and you can return them if you change your mind. Why can't the same happen with your own body in a situation of sex? I mean, we change our minds. And men are not animals. They are human beings with brains who need to be taught from a young age that it is their responsibility and no one else's to control what they do with their body.
Of course, women can change their mind at any point. I was never at any point saying they can't. Mm-hmm. They can change their mind at any point, and any decent bloke will listen to that woman the second she says no. We agree with that 100%.
Good.
But women also have a responsibility, knowing that they are the weaker sex, generally. Again, you would beat the shit out of me.
The physically weak, except in this situation where I look at you both and I know, you know.
Yeah, you can take
I could, you know, I know my stuff. I watch MMA, don't you worry.
You can go on.
Sorry, continue, Nick, continue.
So if you're aware of that in your head and you're aware that men do like to have sex and I've been talking to this bloke for 2 hours in the bar and he's asked me to come back to his house, what? You don't think he wants you to have sex with him?
Of course. Well, you might think he wants you to have sex with him, but, I mean, this is part of the culture that going back to someone's house means sex. I mean, why? Why does that mean sex? Because TV shows tell us it is, because men want sex. I mean, who decides what that means? Okay, so that's on the men then. Rather than the woman thinking, I've been talking to him for 2 hours, he's asked me to go back to his place, that probably means sex. Maybe it's on the man to think, she's agreed to come back to my place, but she is also allowed to just want to kiss or just want to talk and play chess. I mean, I'm not saying there's not equal responsibility, but why is that on the woman to know that going home to someone's apartment means sex and everyone needs to just be aware of that? I mean, why can't we change that culture?
So it doesn't necessarily mean that that is definitely what he wants.
Sure.
But you can't be surprised if that is, you get there and he goes, yeah, I want sex.
Of course not. No.
No. And if, like, you're talking about a stranger, like, why would you go home to a stranger's house not knowing what they want?
So hang on, rewind. You just said, you can't be surprised. Of course, you're not surprised. But then you are allowed to say no, and then he needs to accept that.
Absolutely.
Of course. So I don't know. I guess I'm just confused about...
Well, he's just saying that any reasonable man will accept that. But yes. There are a lot of unreasonable
men. Sure.
And any reasonable woman will think in their head, he probably wants to have sex with me.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty upfront in telling guys I'm not going to have sex with you. I mean, in the past, obviously. I mean, now I'm wearing a wedding ring, so it's sort of obvious. But, you know, I'm upfront with that. I mean, I probably wouldn't be surprised if a guy wanted sex if you go back to his house. But why does that have to be the expectation? And it's this difficult thing, because if I was advising my daughter, who I don't have yet, but if I was to have a daughter, I would probably want to advise her to be cautious about walking around at 3 a.m. by herself, particularly in a dodgy area, sure, or going home to a stranger's apartment. I would probably want to caution her about those things. But I also wouldn't want to raise a daughter to think that she is helpless and that she is to blame if something went wrong in that situation. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying
I agree with you 100%.
Nick, I'm not saying I have an answer to it. Well, I'm just saying I think if I was to raise a daughter, I would have that conflict in my mind of I want this woman to have her own agency and I would never, ever want her to blame herself for something that happened to her. I don't think I have an answer.
Well, part of the answer,
how we teach young girls about that.
Well, part of the answer is teaching young boys.
Yes. Well, that's exactly, that's, yeah.
So if you got your son, you know, what are you going to teach your son? Because that's part of the cultural problem, is that they're not being taught enough.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of White Ribbon Day, Nick. White Ribbon Day, I think, even within feminist circles, is a bit controversial. So not all feminists are big fans of it. I can go into that another time. But I love White Ribbon Day because I think that's when we empower men to speak to other men about this issue. Because when I was a youth worker, I had great programs that we'd run on White Ribbon Day where we'd get men to recite the White Ribbon Oath to all the girls. And it was beautiful. And it wasn't about blame. It, you know, it wasn't angry. It was just boys saying to other boys, this is the standard and we own this. We are in control of our bodies and our what we do with our hands and our heads and our, you know, how we speak. And that's awesome. Address guys from a young age. Talk to them about this issue, because blaming a victim when something happens to them, I don't think it's ever the answer. I don't think it helps, because the cause of rape is not the woman walking around at 3 a.m. The cause of rape is the man who thinks that's okay. That's what I believe we need to be looking at. The man who doesn't realize that when a girl's saying no, he needs to stop right then and there.
One thing I was going to talk about was way back. It was just about one thing that could change is our judicial system with regards to our conviction rate of assault and rapers just being so low. And what I found really disturbing was hearing that there are doctors, you know, women who have been raped, you know, the doctors are advising them, don't take this to court, because it actually ends up causing them much more stress and you know, just puts them through torment. So that we've got a system where they have to confront their attacker usually. And whereas there are other judicial systems within some European countries where, you know, you don't have to confront the attacker. It's done in separate rooms, because it's just very traumatic experience for a lot of people to have to go through that. So there's something that we need to look at is the judicial system. And so that's one thing that I think feminism can focus on.
Yeah. So Ruby, you mentioned a little while back in passing about the Me Too movement, and it's something Chris and I have very briefly touched on, but I'm interested in hearing what Chris's views on the movement is, and yeah, talk about your views on it, Chris.
My views on it, I mean, we talked about it back in an episode called Harvey Weinstein Gets Dragged Out of the Closet, and back then you were a massive supporter of the Me Too movement and what was going on with Harvey Weinstein.
Those were simpler days.
They were for Nick, yeah. Because the Me Too campaign was, there was a lady who put out that she had experienced some sexual harassment or assault, and any other woman who had experienced that, they should, you know, use the hashtag Me Too and tell their stories as well. And so that, it just went viral. It went worldwide. It just showed the depth and the breadth for me, you know, how many women. And then I start looking at statistics, you know, and it's like, you know, one in two, every other woman has experienced some form of harassment at least. That's just, okay, I remember back in the 90s, I was going to a party and it was a dress-up party and I went dressed as a woman. And I was a pretty boy back then. I didn't have the beard. I was pretty subtle about it, so I didn't go, you know, crazy dress up as woman, but I did have this nice sort of 60s dress on. I had a sort of like a beehive wig. I had some fake eyelashes and something stuffed down a bra in my top.
Chris?
Yeah?
I'm going to need a photo of that podcast image, I'm afraid.
I'll have to try and remake that. You know, I'm going to have to shave and everything. But so I went to this party. That was fine. Then we decided that we'd go out to a club, to the club that I normally go to every week. You know, we went out and I went out dressed as this. And as I was walking to the club, walking along the streets, there were guys wolf whistling at me from their cars. And I got to the club and there were guys trying to buy me drinks, putting their arms around my shoulders, you know, and I was just getting looks everywhere. And I was going, is this what it's like to be, you know, female? This is...
Yes.
And it was shocking to me. I also ended up flirting with my best mate at the club, who didn't realize I'd been out at a party, and he didn't talk to me for 2 weeks after he figured out it was me. But so I was shocked that that's the sort of experiences that women go through. Yeah, that was a bit of a groundbreaking moment for me at the time, just dressing up as a woman and experiencing that for, you know, a few hours. That's it. Not every day of my life. You know, that's...
Yeah.
So the Me Too campaign, anyway, like when we talked about it, you were a massive supporter of it, Nick, and then we had further discussions when things started to potentially unravel, you know, like when what happened to Matt Damon. So Matt Damon came out and made some comments and he was pulled through the coals by Minnie Driver specifically, but by the Me Too campaign a lot as well. And You got pretty angry about that, didn't you?
We recorded a whole episode on it, but you refused to release it.
I was not well when we recorded that. I was sick.
Excuse.
It was
dictator.
Hot.
He's a dictator, Nick.
I did not feel that I represented myself well. It's still there.
Oh, is that why? Oh, now the truth comes out.
Well, I said I was angry and...
All right, is this becoming a counselling session? Yeah. Do I need to start mediating between you? I thought Chris was the mediator here. I don't know.
Normally.
you thought we were inviting you on as a guest, but really that was just a pretense to get our shit sorted out.
I should have known.
Yeah.
But the Matt Damon incident happened and you, for me, that's when I saw you really losing faith in the Me Too movement and in feminism. And I know that also your whole concept of developing around people identifying as something and that becoming a tribalistic thing which they identify with also became a big part of your worldview. And so you thought that, you know, when people identify as something that they set themselves up in divisions that don't need to be there between people. So there were all these things that started to come together. And so you went from being someone who I saw as a feminist, someone who was massively behind the Me Too campaign because bloody hell, Harvey Weinstein deserved to get dragged out of that closet. But then things have changed to the point where you're now arguing a lot with Ruby here about what feminism is and whether it should be.
We're not arguing, we're dialoguing, but so, yeah, continue.
So the Me Too movement was really recent, but it also seems to have been a recent thing which has had a massive impact on you then, I guess. Would that be right?
Yeah, definitely.
Because?
I think it's been a great example of how something that started off so positively could be skewed so awfully by the radical fringe.
Mm.
Because if Me Too, if all it was an opportunity to give victims a voice, to give them the strength to go through official channels like police and HR to seek justice, that would be brilliant. If that's what it was, that's brilliant. As a society, we need to be giving the constant message that women or men, if you were sexually assaulted, but most of sexual assault victims are women, we need to be giving the message to them that they can stand up against this sort of stuff and we will support them in going through that process, 100%. Mm. But the problem is that the Me Too movement also inspired like witch hunts, like of Matt Damon, like Jeffrey Rush and a whole bunch of other ones. Like there was, I don't know if you heard about it, but in the months following Weinstein and Me Too, there was this spreadsheet put together called Shitty Media Men, which was about men in the media industry who had been alleged of inappropriate behavior. And it was a public spreadsheet that anyone could post on. You know, these aren't people that have been charged. These are just people that anyone wanted to make an accusation about without needing to have any evidence whatsoever. They could just go on there and fill it in. So the lady that created that spreadsheet, when she was defending the creation of that spreadsheet, she said, when a reporting channel has enforcement power, like a HR department or the police, it also has an obligation to presume innocence. Like, to me, that is insane. Like, we have to presume innocence of people. So when we say that women, you have to be free to come forward and make accusations, that's not us saying we will just believe everything you say and we will just, you know, presume the person's guilty immediately. It's saying we want you to come forward and we will help you to stand up in court and fight for what you believe is right. But we're not just going to force every man to be killed either in court or in public opinion. Because as soon as you make these accusations publicly, like you talked about Ansari, like his reputation is ruined.
I wouldn't think so. He'd still have a lot of support in regards to what happened. But there is that issue of the court of public opinion doesn't have a due process. And the court of public opinion should still carry some weight because it should act as a deterrent for bad behaviour. But when no one's being jailed for just accusations, they still get that presumption of innocence when they go before a judicial court.
Yeah, but not in public opinion. I think your idea that Ansari is untarnished from this is way off base.
Oh, I wouldn't say untarnished, but I wouldn't say it's in tatters either.
Can I just clarify something, Nick?
Yeah.
Is the fact that the Me Too movement has done, you would describe it as it has done some good and it has done some bad, is your concern for the men who've potentially lost their reputation or their career, is that enough for you to reject the movement completely, even if it has done a crazy amount of good for the culture around sexual assault and its acceptance? Like, it's not a trick question or sarcastic. I'm genuinely curious.
I think that is a difficult question, and not because I'm the one that has to answer it, but just because, like, it's almost an impossible one to answer.
Mm.
because both can be true. Mm. Like, it's awful what has happened yep. to these women. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, like I think you mentioned earlier, most women that are sexually assaulted don't report it.
Yep.
I don't blame them for not reporting it, but that sucks. It sucks that they don't feel that they're in a society where, or they don't feel they have the evidence or whatever it is, because you do need evidence to win a court case. Mm. But, yeah, that sucks. But at the same time, it's true that men's reputations are being ruined, and we can't just pretend that some men are good and some men are evil and all women are brilliant, and that if they're making the accusation, it must be true. If you believe that, like, I don't think you're being genuine.
Okay, yeah, I know what you're saying. I think I agree in a sense, like I no, don't agree, but I I am definitely not the sort of person to feel that, just this is for me personally, that I need to agree with everything in the feminist movement to identify as a feminist, or I love the Me Too movement and I really support it. I wouldn't necessarily say I'm on the same page in terms of, you know, Matt Damon's comments, and, you know, I think I can see that it's not black and white, and I, you know, I think the Me Too movement ultimately has done good, and that it is challenging and it is incredibly messy and people will have different opinions. I think we need to be able to say there's a difference between Al Franken, who, I don't know if it's alleged or if it's confirmed, grabbed women's backsides. There's a difference between that and Harvey Weinstein. I think we need to be able to say that, because like what you were saying before, otherwise I think it is disrespectful to the women who've been through, the victims of Harvey Weinstein, the women who've been through that. I think we need to be able to say that. It still doesn't, it's not enough for me to reject the Me Too movement and what it stands for, because I am far, far more angry about the women who've had to live with sexual assault than I am about the possibility that men might lose their careers. I'm not saying we should just accept it. It's a, you know, oh, whatever. It's a side effect. We can't avoid it. We need to have a conversation about it. But I guess, I don't know, I just sometimes I feel a bit disappointed that there's so much anger over these men's careers, and I don't feel as though there's a similar level of anger about what's happened to these women. From, I guess, the people who don't like the Me Too movement, it's because there's so much anger about what's happened to these men's careers. And I just think, can we get angry about sexual assault as well? I mean, it feels like it's surprising to me that someone would want to really distance themselves from that whole movement and the good that it's done, because there's a couple of really difficult conversations to have about consent and about, is it assault or is it not assault?
So you think there's some men who think it's worse what's happened to, say, Ansari than women have been raped? I don't think there was anyone that would think that.
Well,
I think that's a straw man.
There's maybe no one that would say it quite like that. In terms of their public outrage, yes. There's selective outrage about this stuff. I mean, publicly, if you said, what's worse, you know, someone being falsely accused or someone being raped? Probably if someone, you know, is in their right mind, they'd say, of course, someone being sexually assaulted, someone being raped. But, I mean, people can say that. But, you know, when I look at what makes people angry and when I look at what people are talking about online and what people are fighting for, and, you know, I definitely think some people are much more angry about what's happened to these men's careers.
That's exactly the argument I have when feminists say that, oh, we can care about feminist issues in the third world and we can care about feminist issues in the first world. It's exactly the same thing.
Do you want to sort of just hash it out?
Yeah, well, so all of us have a limited amount of conversation we can have, and we can't fight for every topic forever.
Yeah.
So we have to pick and choose.
Yep. Sure.
And so the idea that any feminist would say, I'm going to fight for the gender wage gap, which doesn't exist, I'm going to fight for that instead of...
We'll just let that one go.
No, I'm happy to be drawn into that one. But the idea that you would focus on that instead of focusing on women in Iran who have to live their whole lives in bags and if they don't, may well get stoned, that is a feminist issue. And if you're talking about the wage gap, I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, okay. So you're saying there's selective outrage in the feminist movement as well.
Absolutely.
We're angry about things that you think don't need to be priorities. I guess what I'm saying is, be angry about the men who've lost their careers, but when that is enough for you to reject the Me Too movement, that's different. So when you're so angry about these men's careers that you think that's bull crap, I don't really think those two things are comparable.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there's a better way to do it. To be able to, like you've talked about education a number of times. We have to be able to educate women to be able to say, I am going to stand up for this and I'm going to sue this bastard or I'm going to take him to court And even if I don't win, I'm going to take him to court because it's the right thing to do, and that will put in his head that he cannot just do this to women, that I'm going to fight for it. Even if there's no evidence, I'm still going to do it. And even though it's going to be bloody difficult, I'm going to do it because I'm strong enough and because this is wrong what happened to me. Mm-hmm. That's what every woman who's been through this has to do. Now, you know, obviously I haven't been through it, and that can make me seem like a total jerk to just be like, oh, that's so easy to do. I'm not saying it's easy to do, but I'm saying that's the right thing to do.
Do you think we also need to address what Chris was saying, though, about the judicial system and the way that can treat women? You know, they talk about re-victimization. It can be about reliving the experience all over again. I mean, you know what I mean? Do you think that there's something to address there?
Quite possibly. I haven't looked into it. Yeah. I haven't looked at how other countries do it. Like, I know my wife has talked about the court cases she's went through, and she talked about it as being horrific.
Yeah.
That, you know, sitting in the same room as her grandfather who raped her for 13 years, you know, how hard would that be? And when he's put in your head numerous times that no one's going to believe you, yeah, that's bloody difficult.
Yeah.
So I get that. But it's still the right thing to do. And if there's ways to make that easier, yeah, like Chris was saying, if we can have them in separate rooms, if you can do video evidence, any of that sort of stuff, if that's going to make it better, absolutely. Yeah, I'm 100% for that.
Yeah, I think we can agree there. You know, if a young girl came to me when I was a youth worker and disclosed something about that, I don't know, you're a youth worker too, Chris, my first response would be to listen, to create a safe place. And, you know, I would love to help her feel empowered to do something about it. I'd also be pretty respectful if she didn't want to, though. I think I think you'd agree with that.
Yeah, like, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I think we're on the same page there.
I'm sure Chris has been through this situation, but that's like
a million times.
Not a million, but too many.
Too many.
I've been sitting in that situation.
Yeah.
And 100%, like, when you're sitting across the table from that girl and she's talking about it, like, there's no part of me that wants to pressure her into going to court.
Of course.
But
not.
What I say to them is, look, it's 100% your decision. If you choose to go to court, I will be with you 100% of the way.
Yeah.
Know that you are not going to walk this alone. If you choose not to do it, I'm still here for you 100%, and you can see me at school every day for the next 5 years. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'll be here either way. Part of the thing about sexual assault, it's about taking away power from another person.
Yes.
So you don't want to do that again.
No.
You want to make them feel like they are in control.
And that's what the language you were using was, that's empowering them. That's giving them power back. And that's
the power to
that's
choose how they respond to
and
that
that's
situation.
How I'm trained to deal with that situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they need to feel empowered again.
Mm.
And that's, for me, that's where feminism comes into play. Is it's also about empowering women.
Empowering them, but also giving them the agency. This is something I've been educating my husband on lately. He's learned a few things about this, that empowering them, they are their own agents. They get to decide whether we like that decision or not, that is up to them. I've told my husband, if a man says some comment to me in the street and he's there, let me respond. That's up to me if I want to respond to him or not. If I ask him for help, then please help, you know, if he feels comfortable doing that. But that's not his job to come to my rescue there.
That's hard because he's been trained all of his life
absolutely.
To be the masculine one. And
and good on him. He loves me. He wants to defend me, and he feels it's his role. Like, you know, there's this implicit kind of need to, you know, isn't it our job as men to protect women? And I think it's our job as humans to protect and care for each other. But in that situation, that is up to me if I want to say something to this guy, if I want to tell this guy to shut the hell up or not. For Jono, for my husband Jono, it really surprised him, I think, and he had to kind of think how he sees that, because I think he thought the good male ally thing to do is to tell the guy to piss off. Then that's a whole other way of seeing it. How do we empower women, girls, to decide what the best response is for them and equip them? And like you said, Nick, I've got your back, whatever that is.
Ruby, do you have any questions for a male ally in feminism or a male ally in equality?
I know there's different ideas about what men's role is in feminism and inequality. I personally think men can identify themselves as feminist if they want to. Who am I to say whether they can or they can't? I really believe in including men in the movement. What I don't believe in, though, is changing the message so to avoid any discomfort for men. I think change and progress requires a certain level of comfort for people who experience privilege. And I need sometimes to feel uncomfortable when we talk about white privilege, because I have been allowed certain advantages in my life based on the fact that I'm white. And sometimes I feel uncomfortable talking about those things. I was a part of a Invasion Day rally on Australia Day. I joined a group of very passionate and some very, very angry First Nation people, and to be honest, at times it felt uncomfortable, the anger that was there, and I felt uncomfortable in certain moments, but I just knew that I needed to sit in that discomfort and just listen. So I guess I'm not afraid to say things that will make men uncomfortable. I will continue to do it even if it's uncomfortable and even if they disagree. But I guess I don't know. I'm really having a feminist debate in my head right now.
I want to hear this debate.
Can you?
What's the debate?
It's this debate about, I don't have this figured out, I'll say that first. But there's this tension between, I don't think we do feminism favors when we say, oh, men, how can we include you better? I mean, I'm reading a book at the moment called Fight Like a Girl from Clementine Ford, and she, Nick loves her. I actually really love her. I don't agree with everything she says, but I do really like her. And her book's changed my life. That is not an exaggeration. It's been pretty profound. But she doesn't care if men want to be a part of it or not. She is going to say what she believes to be the truth. And I think my instinct is to want to create a way that feminism can be inclusive of men. But I guess the debate in my head is that my conditioned desire to be liked by men. Do you know what I mean? I think a lot of women have this, we don't want to be those words we were told we were. We don't want to be bossy. We don't want to be angry. We don't want to be that angry, hairy-legged feminist who hates all men, who's emotional. Hysterical, over-emotional. And, you know, I don't want to be labeled those things. And I think some feminists have been happy to bear that label. So I guess the debate that's happening in my head is it that I don't want to be labeled that way, or do I genuinely want to make sure that feminism is inclusive of men? Well, part of me wants to ask you, how can we include you better in the feminist movement? And part of me wants to say, I don't really care if you feel included or not. You know, that's not the purpose. And I'm not interested in convincing people they should start calling themselves a feminist if they don't want to. That's a waste of my time. You know, I want to look at the issues that are facing women and I want to address those. Yeah, I guess the label's not as important to me as the issues are. Mm. So there's people in my life who I think are incredibly passionate about gender equality and particularly women's issues who wouldn't call themselves a feminist because of what they believe it represents, and I don't care. That's fine. But I want to make sure the message of feminism is clearer maybe.
Okay.
You know, what is it about the message that you think's not clear? What do you think it is about it that's not getting through?
I can make up my own mind. I'm a feminist. That's my response. Nick?
Oh, is it just about not caring about whether men are included?
No, it's about what of the message of feminism, why is it falling flat for some people, essentially?
Yeah.
There's a fringe element which people utilise as a way to dismiss it, I think. And I think we did a podcast just recently about identity politics, and one of the things for me was, you know, people identify out of personal experience, and it's a tricky thing because I don't want to dismiss that just because of a fringe element. So I'm not going to dismiss the Me Too movement because of some things that might be awry with it. I'm not going to dismiss feminism because of people who might say men can't be feminists or whatever. It's the same with a lot of things that I identify with. One thing that was interesting out of that last podcast was, you know, Nick had been asking me the question, you know.
I did listen to that podcast.
Yeah, so there was that bit in there about, because you've been a Christian, you were brought up as a Christian.
Yes, correct. You know,
there was a message from Paul that we're neither slave nor free, neither male nor female, neither, what were some of the others?
Gentile.
Neither Gentile nor Jew, all of those things that, you know, we're all one under Christ sort of concept. Because I don't like to let people leave the eternity ward without having a discussion around how all of this ties into their faith.
It's an interesting one because, you know, I talked about my journey into feminism.
Because the Bible also has a lot of things to say about women.
Yeah, it sure does. Yeah. One of the big parts for me was when I started studying after high school, I started studying youth work. As part of that, we did, you know, study of theology and the Bible, and I knew that the Bible said some things about women, but the more I studied it, the more I just started to feel like, hang on, does God actually see women as inferior to men? I mean, that's from the best of my brain could figure out from what I was reading. And I just started to panic. Oh my gosh, was I wrong the whole time? Am I sort of below men but above animals? Like, that's really what started to mess with my head, and it was making me angry.
I think it can equally mess with men's heads.
Yeah.
I think that they're, you know, more important.
Yeah. So I started asking questions of people with bigger brains than myself and people who had studied it a lot more. And I feel like sometimes I got answers that I was happy with and other times I didn't. And I think the more, you know, the more I learn and grow in my faith, I think I move further and further away from the church, to put it in inverted commas, you know, the congregation. Or, and I really understand why a lot of people who love Jesus don't call themselves Christians, because, you know, the church I used to go to, my husband sat next to me and the person up the front said something about, you know, we're looking for a new pastor. We pray that the right person will come along, whoever he may be. You know, my husband turned to me and said, oh, he meant to say they, like, or he or she. And I turned to him and said, no, 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 they don't allow women to preach in this church. And he stared at me and said, why do you go here? Just shocked that I would sit in a church that didn't allow women to preach. So I think I struggle with that, and I think I'm still figuring it out. I don't think I have a set answer for... Well,
just one of... So you still identify as Christian?
Yes,
you
know, I do.
Because one of the things of becoming a Christian is often walking away from identities that you held into the identity of being a Christian. And like, we're all one under that.
Yes.
So I struggle with that when Nick threw that at me, because I want to maintain that everyone can still have identities. And I still think you can have identities within... still holding a oneness that we all don't have to call, you don't have to call it under Christ or Christian, but the oneness of humanity, you know, that has to be our focus.
Yeah.
But can you still maintain things like feminism within that?
Yeah, yeah. And it's not, it's hard. And I know a lot of people who say they don't use the word Christian because of what it means today. Mm. So, you know, not that it necessarily doesn't describe their belief system, but what Christian means to people today when you say it doesn't describe them. So I do really appreciate that. And I always sometimes feel like when I say I'm a Christian, but like, don't worry. and I think that's really sad that, you know, that's often the place where it's at. And I saw someone's Facebook status said, I long for a day where I'm a Christian means I love my neighbor and not I hold certain political beliefs, you know. Mm. And I wish that's what it meant. I use the word. I don't know if I should or not. I know a lot of people would say I'm not a Christian. If they were to talk to me, get deeply into what my beliefs are, they'd probably say I wasn't. I say I am. Mm.
Nick would probably ask the question, is it helpful to do that? I don't know. I want to give Nick the opportunity to say that. To self-identify with things.
Yeah, so that was the thing I was going to say. Mm. Like, you're talking about it from the sense that it can create confusion, because what you mean by Christianity might not be what the other person means by it.
Yeah.
That's not my argument. My argument is that it's unhelpful for you yourself to think of yourself as a Christian, because it creates a group that you're part of and therefore other people aren't part of that group.
Okay.
Likewise with feminism, you would say.
Yeah.
You know, I listen to that Identity Politics podcast and I kind of get what you're saying. It's where you go into the territory of it's not helpful to identify as male and female. I mean, maybe I'm misrepresenting you there. Is that true?
I definitely don't think, like, I am male. Like, I'm not trying to tell you that I'm not male. I'm not trying to tell you that sex doesn't exist.
Mm.
But it is unhelpful if I tie my identity to being male. And if I tie my identity to being Christian, I think that's unhelpful. I think you should tie your identity to being human. And the bigger we can get that sphere that you're part of, the better it is for our world.
Yeah, I guess I don't understand why we can't be male, female and human, why we can't recognize that we have diversity and we have unity. We have both. Enjoy the difference and the, you know, I love sitting down with a Muslim person or an atheist person and understanding their world better. I think it makes me a better person when I can understand someone else's world, someone else's identity better. I think just sort of saying everyone's human, I mean, we are all human. I just think we can have both. I don't really think it needs to be either or. I think identity helps us sort of navigate the world. And I don't know, I'm white, so I'd be really curious to hear what a culturally diverse person would. I think Sky talked about it a little bit with you guys on your podcast. I think identity is incredibly valuable in how we connect with people and how we understand diversity and how we appreciate difference.
So, Nick, would you say identity is important, but identity groups are the issue, or
exclusive identity groups?
And my argument is that feminism isn't exclusive, because I feel like it's not excluding me at all.
Yeah, that's part of the problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Chris, you talked about that there are some fringe elements in feminism that you don't agree with.
Sure.
My problem is that Clementine Ford isn't the fringe, and she says some crazy stuff. And if she's not the fringe, if she's the center of it, then, oh my God, it's a horrible movement.
What makes you say she's the center of it?
The way she talks about men is that men are evil, that she doesn't even want them in the movement, and that they're all rapists, they're all whatever.
Sorry, but...
Like she's said quotes about, you know, we should send them all into a cannon and shoot them into the sun or something like that. If a man said that about women, my God...
Well, I can talk. Sorry, just when I said, you know, what makes you say she's the center of it, what makes you believe that she represents feminism?
Who do you think is more central to feminism than her? Like, obviously, it's not a hierarchical structure, so it doesn't have an official appointed head. But if you don't think she is in the center of feminism, then, yeah, maybe I've got the wrong idea of feminism.
Yeah, I think you do. And I think, you know, when I think about Christianity, for example, if the people who are the center of Christianity in this world today represented me, fuck off. That is not representative of me, but I'm still a Christian and you can't tell me otherwise. You know, I mean, if you look at the evangelicals in America or even, you know, just the Australian Christian lobby, okay, I've got in trouble for criticizing them on Facebook before. I spam them with Bible verses about refugees because they don't seem to care much about it. I would say you could conclude that the Australian Christian lobby represents Christianity. You know, they're probably a pretty central political...
Because they're a prominent voice. But
I would be horrified if people said because they're good clickbait, because they get the media attention, that's what Christianity is.
So Clementine Ford is a prominent voice.
Yeah, and I agree with some...
So you're equating her to the ACL. You think that, like, most Christians aren't actually like the ACL, and they, you know, will publicly say, the ACL do not represent me, and I think that what they said there was horrific. You're saying that most feminists, 99.9% of feminists, would think the same of Clementine Ford.
I don't think 99.9% of Christians would disagree with the ACL. I probably think more Christians would agree with them than wouldn't. I'm not necessarily saying they're exactly equal. I'm sort of just saying, you know, we can look at a prominent voice and conclude that that's what that movement is, or we can say that we are human, we disagree. I mean, I like Clem. I'm reading her book, and I agree with a lot of what she says. Some of the chapters in her book made me furious, and I was like, that's not true at all. Right. But then other ones inspired me to tears. So I don't know. I'm able to see the difference there and accept that I don't have to agree with everything she says, or the way she handles cyberbullying as well. I wouldn't handle it like that. And
so could I hear you criticize her then?
Yeah, sure. Probably the way she sometimes responds to online bullies. It's pretty hard because I've never had the sort of crap she has to deal with online. So I don't know if I'd respond any better, but I don't agree with her. I've never heard her say she doesn't think men can be feminist, but I believe if you're saying she said that before, I don't agree with that. I think that's wrong. I think they can be. I don't think it's her place to say whether men can or cannot identify themselves as feminist. But a lot of what she says I think is brilliant. I think she's incredibly brave to say it and to be hated by a very large portion of Australia. I don't know. She's not perfect. Okay. She did say kill all men. Do you remember that tweet, Nick? I think it was a tweet.
She's written it in people's books as well. Like at book signings, people will come up and give her a book and she writes, you know, have you killed a man today? Well, you should have, or something like that. And you're like I understand
that's
jokes.
Not helpful.
I do, I do think
helpful.
Jokes are funny.
That's not
but
helpful.
That's not a joke.
No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't agree with that, no. I guess the comparison was with the ACL was, do I need to reject Christianity because I don't agree with all Christians, even the prominent ones? No, I don't feel the need to do that, same as I don't with feminism.
I don't feel like I've ever heard a feminist criticise Clementine Ford. There would be plenty of Christians who would have debates with Lyle Shelton about whether his version of Christianity is accurate.
Mm.
I've never seen a debate between Clementine Ford and, you know, an Emma Watson-style feminist who is actually wanting men to be part of the movement.
I'd love to see it. Be awesome. Be a great debate to hear. I'd love to talk to her more. Like Emma Watson, I really like the he for she movement. That's certainly a style of feminism that I'm for. Yeah, I guess I'm happy to criticise Clem. I don't think she's always right, for sure. I don't think she's always wrong.
I feel out of my depth. I don't even know the he for she.
Yeah,
movement.
Sorry. Oh, he for she, Emma Watson, United Nations.
I know Emma
wasn't?
Watson, but I don't know that movement.
Mm. Encouraging men to be a part of the feminist movement, really. I think a debate between them would be awesome. Maybe not a debate, but a discussion between them to sort of help bring out those different voices in feminism and allow people like yourself who's I'm going to be generous and say skeptical of the feminist movement, to hear the different voices in it rather than, you know, sort of see the ones that pop up on your Facebook because they're good clickbait and, you know, it sounds controversial, so it gets a lot of attention. But to be able to hear those different voices and to hear them hash out, what does this mean? It's messy. No one person agrees with another one person on everything.
Yeah, so it probably hasn't come across in this discussion, but I wanted to make really clear that in many cases, I would call myself a feminist. Like if you're talking about the first wave of feminism, where it was about the right to vote and the right to stand for parliament, I'm that sort of feminist. If you're talking about the second wave of feminism, where you're talking about equality in terms of gender pay, I'm 100% with that as well. I am not on board with the third wave of feminism where it's talking about equality of outcome. That is just, it's crazy. And the problem is that people don't feel they can call it out and say that that's crazy because they feel like they'll be labelled as a misogynist. And
okay, I guess we're coming back to that idea of choice. But again, I guess you're talking about choice as though everyone's choosing from the same options. And I just don't believe that's true. I think because of domestic violence, things like domestic violence don't get that choice. You know, where I work, we've got 10 days of domestic violence leave at our work. And, you know, imagine a workplace where you don't have that. Women are having to take time off work to look after kids because of broken families, difficult home situations. You know, it'd be really great, Nick, if everyone had a family situation like you guys where you're both calmly and reasonably able to decide between you in a way that you both appreciate. A lot of women are raising kids on their own. A lot of women are raising kids with a man who would not even dare consider staying at home with them. A lot of women are raising kids with men that they wouldn't want to be alone with their children. A lot of women are unable to get a job that pays well enough because they weren't able to receive an education. Some women are refugees. Some women are newly arrived migrants who aren't able to speak fluent English, and so their employment options are much more limited. I mean, that's not exclusive to women, but I just think it's really easy to say, well, they get to choose. Sure, but what are the options that they're choosing from? I don't think they're all the same as the options you and your wife are choosing from.
The way you talk about women there sounds so disempowering to me. It talks about them like they're all victims and they can't possibly change their situations. And it's just not true. Women, you are strong. Stand up for yourself. Don't put up with a bloke who isn't going to treat you properly. If he's going to say you have to do this, say, fuck off. I'm not going to put up with you. I'm going to go and find a better bloke.
Sure. That sounds awesome.
I look around and I see that we are making progress towards that. You know, I've been watching the AFLW, the Women's Football League, and I see these little girls who now have posters of heroes of theirs on their walls, you know, and I see things like
Black Panther.
Yeah, superhero movies like Wonder Woman. Black Panther had a lot of female characters
warriors
in it that were really strong.
They're awesome.
So it's just, it's about letting young girls grow up to be able to see that they are strong, you know, and just, you know, all the little things like, you know, run like a girl, you know.
Yeah, fight like a girl.
Fight like a girl. And so we agree that we need more of that stuff in our society.
Yeah, certainly don't. Education. I certainly wouldn't mean to speak in a way that disempowers women. As a feminist, that idea of that certainly doesn't appeal to me. So I apologize if that's how it came across. I guess I just come from the perspective of disadvantage every day. I work with young people every day. And it's not to say you're stuck in this cycle and that's all. I mean, my dad is a very obvious example of a success story. That's awesome. And, well, he's a guy. Maybe I should choose a – but there's tons.
My wife.
Your wife, absolutely. What a great example of someone who has had to push through and sounds like continues to push through. And when I talk about the challenges and when I talk about, you know, disadvantage, when I talk about poverty, it's not to say that, you know, that's your life and accept it. It's, I think we just need to have an honest conversation about how that can impact people and what the long-term ramifications for that can be. I think the key factor, the research shows the key factor in resilience is having stable people in your life. So they say for a young person, if they have at least one adult in their life, one positive adult role model in their life for 12 months, throughout their childhood. That's pretty much the difference between later on in life about, you know, being able to be resilient later on in life. So, yeah, of course, I was a youth worker. My whole job was to empower young people and empower women. I think we just need to be honest about when we talk about choice. Yes, let's also have a conversation about how we provide better options for them and how we empower them to be able to know that they don't have to be limited by their experiences. I guess I think I agree with you, but I also think I agree with myself.
So what sort of a world do we want to see? I'd like to see a world where we don't need feminism. You probably think we're already there, Nick. But
in Australia.
In the West, I think we're there, yeah. I want us to expand the tribe that we are part of to saying we are all human, and that is the tribe that I'm part of. There is no Jew nor Gentile, blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
What do I want to see? I think you're right, Nick, in that I want to see us be able to have unity in diversity but also in disagreement. I love being able to have calm, maybe not always calm, but respectful conversations with people like yourself, and I really believe in it. I'm horrified of a day when I've surrounded myself, when I'm in an echo chamber of people that agree with me. That's not what I want at all. I've changed my mind on pretty much every contemporary issue in the past 6 years, I think I've changed on. So I want to see a world where we can be different, where we can have different identities, where we can be diverse, we can see and be honest about the difference between cultures, about the difference between men and women, about the difference between people, and that doesn't have to hold us back from being united. And maybe that's okay. Overly ambitious, but I'd love to be able to have right. Both.
I don't have to answer the question because I asked it. Well, we do need to wrap it up, so I guess we want to say...
I also want to see more movies like Black Panther. That movie was awesome.
You know, there was a male lead in that, right?
Yeah, but the women stole the show, didn't they?
Yeah, they
don't did. You think?
I do.
Was he really the lead? That's what I was watching it like, I think the women are the lead in this
movie. Well, that was the same as Mad Max.
They were awesome. Mad Max was awesome.
Fury Road.
So good.
He's not really the lead. She was. Yeah, I want to see more things like that.
Yeah.
I do. But I also want to thank you for coming on and chatting to us and talking to us about your sex life.
Anytime.
And for not beating us up when you know that you could.
Well, there's still time. Can I say something I've learned?
You can.
Is that all right? Do we do that on this show? Yes. Do we acknowledge areas where we may have learned something?
At the end of every episode, we do ask ourselves, what have we learned today?
I found your question interesting, Nick, and I haven't heard this question before. I've heard rape culture doesn't exist. I haven't heard, I guess, the discussion about why we call it rape culture, and your question about is it disrespectful to people who've actually been raped to have that phrase used. And I...
To cover everything.
When we're not talking about rape necessarily, but we're talking about other topics. So I found that a really interesting question, and I don't have the answer. It's the only phrase I've been able to use to describe what I would consider rape culture. So I think it's something for me to go away and think about, because I don't want to use a phrase that trivializes the experiences of women. And I would love to be able to express what I see as to be true, a true culture in Australia, in the right way, in a respectful way. So that's what I've learned. So thank you, Nick. And thanks, Chris.
Cheers.
I appreciate that.
I've never met Ruby before. Yeah. I'm glad to have met you now, Ruby.
I think we have met. I don't think he remembers.
Yeah, possibly.
That's okay. No, when I was probably two or something.
Yeah. It may have come across in this conversation that I somehow dislike you. If anyone has got that message, they are completely wrong. I've loved this conversation. I've really enjoyed talking to you. Like, I think we have to get better in our culture of having conversations with people we disagree with, but still seeing them as one of us. The only difference between you and me is that we have different biology and we've had different experiences. And if I had your biology and had the same experience as you, I'd be exactly the same as you. And so, like, I want to leave with that message that we are all in this together. Like, you are not the enemy in any sense of the word. You are my friend. You are my partner in all of this. We're both striving towards essentially the same goal. We want equality for everyone. And we think that there's different ways to go about that. Yeah. And to me, awesome.
Yeah.
Let's continue the conversation.
Absolutely, I agree.
And I've learned.
What have you learned?
I've learned that I've been fairly quiet during a lot of this conversation because I feel like there's a lot that I don't know. And so I actually really enjoy just listening to the conversation a lot, because I think, you know, I don't want to dismiss other people's experiences, and I want to hear other people's experiences and I want to listen to them. So I've learned that before, but it's good to relearn it, you know.
Yeah, the more I can speak to intelligent people who've thought things through and maybe just come to a very different conclusion to me, I think the more we need to be able to engage with that. But I also think, you know, we need to include people in the conversations who have lived experiences of the topics we're talking about as well. So, you know, what I was saying about what I learned about, you know, the idea of rape culture, maybe that's something I need to think through with people I know who've had experience of rape and sexual assault and understand it from their perspective. I think we need to be able to include people like that in our conversations who can share their lived experiences.
You're saying you like conversations. So if our listener wanted to have a conversation with you,
yeah,
is there anywhere that they can reach you?
They can reach me at my Facebook page, Ruby Ierson. They could reach me on my upcoming podcast, which I'll be releasing.
Of the theme of this podcast?
The theme. Okay, I would love to know if people would listen to it. I want to do a podcast
Give us your pitch.
Movie reviews from a feminist perspective,
right?
Okay? And we score movies out of five vaginas. This movie was a feminist, empowering women movie. Black Panther would get 5 out of 5, you know.
So hold on. So if the movie was shit,
yeah,
it was terrible,
yeah,
but it had like female leads and the director was a female and all the cast were female, what do you do there?
Well, you know, you have to wait and listen to the podcast.
Yeah. Ah, good one. A teaser.
That's my idea.
We need to wrap it up. So thank you for listening to us again. Cheerio, and looking forward to being back here next time.
Peace.
Peace. Love.
Vaginas.
Vaginas. I want to say, you know, grab them by the... I can't say it.
What were you going to say?
I just have Trump quotes in my head all the time.
God here again. Are you shaking your head incredulously or nodding in approval? Well, if you got something out of this episode, you could really help those poor idiots by contributing to or supporting the Eternity Ward. You can leave reviews on iTunes or wherever you listen to it. You can share it on social media or discuss it in your blog, podcast, or fellowship group. Subscribe, like, nod your head, raise your fist, send a hallelujah. I don't know, but don't send a prayer because I'm kind of busy right now. Join the discussion in the comments section, ask questions, and do come back and join us again here on the Eternity Ward. We'll be right back.